Good evening.
It's me, the Woker, once again. You remember me from perhaps the first Halloween episode of Independent Incidentals? But I have now returned to spread my woke ideologies to the masses. As for my first woke statement of the day, I believe that everyone deserves human rights. Oh, you can't stop me now. I'm doing a little dance. You can't see it, but I'm doing a little dance. Oh, I'm tap dancing. You can't stop me now.
How was my impression? It has been a while. I had to really dive into the depths of my mind in order to pull that one out again. It's been quite a bit of time since I donned the mask of the Woker. He calls to me like the Green Goblin mask, and that it makes a lot of sense. You know, it's sort of like it's like my alter ego. As all my other alter egos have, you know, I wear many masks. The Banana Man, the Woker, Andreas the Skeleton, you know, those kind of masks. But no other mask kind of puts into perspective life as a whole as the Woker. The Woker is the symbol for people everywhere. So put on your Woker masks and let's get a little cozy in today's Halloween episode. Ladles and germs, welcome back to Independent Incidentals. Now, here's the fun part. You're probably thinking last week, Dominic, what the hell was that? Excuse me, huh? Yeah, I know. It was all of a bit of a mishap. It was a scheduling mishap, ladles and germs, and I'll promise it'll never happen again. For those who were unaware or do not watch the show, which you indeed should, because we're live pretty much every Wednesday except for last Wednesday, which was the reason why it did not go out as well as I planned, because apparently at 9 p.m. there's another show that's not being recorded live like mine is, of course, but one that's being streamed after being already pre-recorded. So I could not take up the space because someone already had that slot. So I was kind of left unawares. What am I supposed to do specifically about this? Uh-oh. Tis a real jumbled mess, isn't it? But don't worry. We're going to have plenty of time. And also you might be wondering, specifically, Dominic, why did it take you 20 damn minutes to get into the damn stream? I want my Halloween spooks now! Well, here's the fun part. Apparently the network is being a bit homophobic, a little bit, said a few slurs to me, I don't know. I think we should cancel that one. Like, the network specifically, was being incredibly homophobic in regards to the way that it blocked me from being able to stream. I think it heard the pre-roll, the cold open that I was doing specifically. So I think it heard that, it assumed, hey, this guy is a woke liberal who doesn't think that, you know, people should be drilling the earth and shouldn't be burning down forests for fuel, guys. Guys, aw, jeez, I didn't realize there was a misunderstanding here. Guys, I'm not a liberal, I'm just a socialist. Oh! That was the scariest thing of all. And to be fair, I do have a fantastic soundboard here to illustrate this.
It's alive!
That's the person. I can't say that joke. My lawyer looked at me, gave me a little bit of a side eye, and shook his head. I can't say that joke. I'm so sorry, everybody. But we have other fun ones too, such as...
I'm really excited for the new movie, I exclaimed with excitement. Little did I know, it would be a feature. A creature feature. Featuring the creature.
We're not looking at the other ones. I've decided we're not looking at the other ones. The other ones do not need to be looked at. I never needed to hear that. I hate brain rot. Anyway, besides the point, if you want to tune in, specifically not on the clock when I'm asleep or when I'm working or when I'm eating or when I'm doing anything else, really, that you don't need to know about, because none of your beeswax, you can go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can go to both of those applications and listen to the show. We just uploaded another episode just yesterday about Disco Elysium. That was one of the episodes that I was a little bit hesitant to publish, mainly on the fact that I couldn't get the game done in time. But I think it still turned out pretty well, and it was pretty fun to record. So please, if you have the time, make sure to listen and tune in every week, because we'll be uploading them every week. Little plug-in out of the way. What have I been doing recently? I'm absolutely astounded that you would ask that, and I do appreciate it profoundly and profusely. You are such a kind viewer, and I will hold you and cherish you until the sun burns out. But I've been trying to get a bit of reading in. I've been trying to... Look, here's the thing. Chris is not here, so I have to do a quick one and a half minute bookmarked. Today I've been reading Terry Pratchett's Raising Steam, the new Discworld novel, apparently. Well, it is technically one of the newest ones, because it was the second last book he wrote before he died, which is very sad, and it also makes me very bummed out. But besides the point, I think this book is already so astoundingly very enticing. It's about raising steam, it's about making railways. In a fantasy setting, I love it so much. I love this concept so much. It's so steampunk, and I just like it. It's very Victorian era. Here's the thing, right? With a lot of Terry Pratchett's works, I feel like I don't like the first, like, 50 pages, right? Because I think the first 50 pages, he just wants to set everything up to the point where... you kind of know where it's going on, but at the same time, it kind of loses its steam. There's still good jokes. There's still good gaffes. A lot of like satirical comedy kind of wiggled right in there, kind of smushed like sardines at the very beginning, which allows you to be still kind of hooked, but at the same time, doesn't really allow you to continue to have the same momentum until you get to around halfway through. But with this one specifically, I love the opening. A lot of like the world building that is going on here is very enticing, especially because there's a specific group of extremists called the Drags that are a dwarvish group of extremists who don't believe in technology, are completely anti-progress, have a lot of radical views, conservative views about specifically trolls and a lot of different things, which I find is really fun and comedic, but also kind of uplays to a kind of broader scale. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the modern day. Thank you very much, right? Of course, I mean, at the same time, it's still like, I feel like we've still got a lot more to go. Because, again, I'm trying to get myself back into reading, and this one is kind of a hard one to do because it's very heavy. It's so heavy, especially there's, like, a little section around, like, page 94 that right here, specifically, where it's like, ah, oh. There's a little character called Commander Vimes who had a mini, if you don't know, Discworld is split up into several different smaller sub-series. Each of them focus on a specific character. There's a specific one that focuses, right, this one right here, Raising Steam, focuses on Moist von Lipwig, a very fantastic name, I know, who is a con man entrepreneur who gets forced to work a government job at a post office, which he utterly succeeds in, and eventually continues working with the banks and the mint, because he just has the mind for these kind of things. It just comes naturally to him, because we all know that businessmen know only to do one thing specifically, which is to swindle. So at least if you're going to be a good swindler, you might as well hire someone who's good at swindling, but also someone who's good at other things as well, which I will not spoil. Raising Steam, however, kind of goes into the more industrial aspect of new technology, right? How people develop it, what happens when things get lobbied, what specifically happens when someone owns the entire idea of an idea, right? The entire concept, right? Intellectual property and stuff like that. But also it talks more about, you know, terrorism, which I was extremely surprised about when it was specifically Commander Vimes came up, because he's sort of about that specific thwarting terrorism, not in the sense of starting war, but just treating it like another crime, trying to treat it as the sort of real thing that it is, but also making sure that the people who committed it don't get the satisfaction of being able to start wars over it, right? Again, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, the common day. This is one of the more recent stories, again, because this was published in 2013. So, again, just a... I love these books so much, and I only have, like, 7 more to go after this. So I'm so sad. I'm going to be so sad once all these are done. But it'll give me an excuse to read it again, and I'll see what I can do. I mean, again, I'm holding on to hope that, like, it ends in a good note, because I need to cry after this. This is, like, the thing, right? I need to have some sort of performative, oh, I finished the final book! Thank you so much, audience! I appreciate you sticking through me thick and thin. Oh, it's such a beautiful thing. All 41 books of Discworld finally done. Oh, day of days. Oh, joy of joys. Etc. You know the drill. I think a lot of this stuff is very interesting. I think a lot of the things that he talks about is really interesting. So I'm excited to see what comes next in the Discworld. Oh, this is so much fun. If you want to read Discworld, please pick up any book that's not like the first 5 and you're going to be good to go. Even the 4th one's pretty good. I think all of them have their own place, but it's specifically what you're looking for. Small Gods is very good, and we might talk about that a little bit later because it kind of ties into the overall themes of what we have today. But until then, hope you're able to read something. I'm staring at you right now. You better read something today, Mr. Buster. People aren't reading enough. We've talked about this with Carissa a little bit. People aren't reading enough, man. People gotta get it on their game. So, I think today we're gonna be talking about specifically something I had set up for quite a while. If you've watched mostly the other episodes of Independent Incidentals, I talked about a specific game called Ultra Kill, right? This game was on my radar since, like, 2023 or something like that. I don't really know where I found it. It was a very, it's a very recommended game. I think a lot of the indie space has a lot of love for this game, particularly with the idea of how versatile it is, its flexibility, and its overall aesthetic, which I will get into very shortly. But what is Ultra Kill? Well, to be very brief, Ultra Kill is a fun, extremely fast-moving, and combo-heavy game where, to insert a tagline, mankind is dead, blood is fuel, and hell is full. That is, in fact, the tagline, and it's something that really enticed me, because a lot of this stuff is just really about killing demons, going to hell, going through just... anything, everything I really needed from a run-and-gun boomer arena shooter. It's everything that I want from this game and more. Because I feel like it has the perfect amount of depth where you're never going to really fully discover... if you're going to be like a casual gamer, right? Which I pretty much am. Beside a few other games. But that's not really, you know... I think most people who listen to the show aren't going to be P-ranking every single level. Or going out of the way to uncover every single secret about this game. People are going to play the game methodically. They're going to just go through the levels as they see fit, because it's a game at the end of the day, right? You play it at your own pace. But I feel like the game gives you exactly the amount of depth that you need in order to succeed. To specifically talk about the gameplay, we're talking about a boomer shooter. What is a boomer shooter, you ask? What is an arena shooter? What is a run-and-gun game? A lot of these concepts kind of get muddled up, I feel like a lot of these specific concepts are kind of intrinsically linked, but at the same time, also they're separate thing. So we'll just quickly go over what a boomer shooter is. This kind of started back in the 90s when I specifically talked about, I think actually it was in the original Afterclass show where I talked about this first. When I was researching about Doom games specifically. It started with Doom, right? It started with all the games like Quake. Things that came on the computer that people immediately started gravitating towards because it was fast, it was quick, it had a lot of skill involved with it. Quake 3 is still like one of the central icons of this industry, or was one of the icons back in the early 2000s and the late 90s, but specifically Doom still has a pretty solid stay within the niche. I think it kind of fell off of it, specifically from a bit of drama and backlash regarding Mick Gordon, because he's the main composer. And you can't have a good boomer shooter game without a good composer. I'm just saying, guys. You gotta treat your composers right. But a lot of the game has to do with just having a bunch of different loadouts, having different guns that you collect through the game, different ways, different styles to play the game, and an overall rounded out game set. Like, obviously, you have, like, you know, simple weapons, like pistols, shotguns. You have more complex, more heavy metal weapons, like machine guns and, like, you know, laser blasters and, like, freaking awesome stuff like that. Like, literally one of the weapons is, like, the BFG, which stands for the Big Effing Gun. Like, the people who make these games aren't taking their games seriously, which I just love about these games, right? Because it's literally supposed to be a sort of hell-raising kind of very thrilling game that involves you just mowing down a hell load, see what I did there, amount of enemies, right? Now, specifically with this game, a lot of the gameplay is surrounded by combos, right? You're graded at the end of each level by three separate metrics. You got style, you got time, and you got, I guess technically four, then. You got deaths, and I think you got one more. The amount of kills, right? The whole idea of the game is to be able to chain up your specific moveset to a point where you're fluid with it, right? And you can dodge people, and you can parry, and all these different mechanics that slowly get incorporated into the game that allow you to move quicker, to allow you to shoot faster, allow you to mow down hundreds of enemies. It makes you feel powerful. Right? This is the kind of idea that we're getting here, folks. This is the kind of meal that we have prepared for us. The whole idea of these kind of games is the idea of feeling powerful, but also giving you enough challenge for you to get to that point, to get to that flow state, as it were, right? I think a lot I like about this game is that the way, again, that it's able to incorporate depth, right? So, at the start of the game, you just get a simple pistol, right? Just a simple pistol. You shoot the enemy, you click, they click their head, bip, 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 they're dead, right? That's the simple mechanic of these kind of games, right? But then you get extra little add-ons to it. These are called mods. You can basically augment the mechanics of your special attack. So each of them just have a basic attack. Each weapon has their own basic attack. So the shotgun is good for close range, the pistol is good for, you know, just shooting people's head, bip, bip, and all that kind of stuff. But they also have their own special augmentations that allow them to do something different, right? Each of them have three different types of augmentations. For example, the pistol. The pistol has the first augmentation, which is a simple laser beam that allows you to shoot, I think, up to three enemies within a line. And then it also has another augmentation that allows you, get this, this is one of the main homesteads of this game. The coin mechanics. Whenever you right-click using this specific augmentation, you flip a coin in the air, right? Now, what would you even do with a coin? You can't hit any enemies with it, obviously. It doesn't do any damage. What do you do with it? That's what you know what you do with it. You shoot it. If you shoot the coin in the air, it'll automatically it'll ricochet the bullet onto another enemy, which is so satisfying a concept, and it almost feels impossible to do at the start of the game. I remember when I first was playing this game, it took a very long time to get the hang of. But eventually, over time, it gets a little easier. You're able to quickly chain your coin shots, and even crazier, you can chain them with other guns, right? I've seen countless people use coins specifically to then shoot with their laser launcher, which then ricochets two laser beams and then hits both of the big enemies at the same time. It's insane to see some of these speedruns. So that's the basic idea. These kind of combos give you what's called style points, which is sort of lifted from Devil May Cry. Again, I've never played Devil May Cry, but I think these mechanics aren't meant to be specifically stolen from. I think a lot of these are, you know, sort of homages in a sense, because they do their own special things with them, right? But of course, you also get the cool Flash font with the DB, DCBA, and then you got SSS, triple S, and then ultra cool. It's very cool. It's very stylistic, and it obviously entices you to go for more style. Obviously, your points decrease the more you use of a similar weapon, so the whole idea is to make sure you never stagnate and constantly switch between weapons. Also, in order to... there's another reason why you want to get style other than simply to look cool and get a good score at the end of the level. When you get hit, in order to recharge your health, you have to accumulate blood, right? Because blood is, in fact, fuel, as we've already mentioned with the tagline. So in order to heal again, you need to be in close range with an enemy and be able to get a lot of blood for them from the demon or the machine or whatever's attacking you at that specific moment. Now, the problem is that when you get hit, the enemies will not only do normal damage to you, but they'll also do hard damage, which cannot be healed until you rack up a bit of style points. This is why style points are that important. They not only give you extra points at the end of the game, but they also unblock your health so you can heal back to full again. Just kind of interesting mechanics like that really entice me, because it allows you, the player, not only to think of, like, you know, one specific thing that they're good at, but try to be good at a bunch of other different things, right? Because it forces you to. It requires you to. Otherwise, you're not really that good at the game. But again, it's really up to the player. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways you can utilize the different weapons. And I've just learned about a bunch of these things recently. There's also other mechanics like, you know, sliding, which allows you to increase your speed slightly. Ground pounding, which also allows you to chain into a higher jump if you want to. There's also wall jumping specifically, and you can do cool, like, mechanics where you can grab onto the wall, then ground pound at the same time, which then allows you to quote-unquote store a jump, which then lets you jump super high, because I think it must be some sort of glitch, right? Speedrunners always find glitches in people's games, but at the same time, we give them kudos for that, because that's what their entire point is, that's what they're meant to do, right? There's also a bunch of other cool stuff, too, like specifically with one augmentation with the shotgun. If you charge this, there's a specific one called a pump shotgun, which allows you to... I just did an incredibly phallic gesture there. Apologies, audience. You can pump the shotgun. You can pump the shotgun. In fact, yes, you can do that. Yes. Do not take my words out of context, audience. Don't clip me. Gosh. You're so immature, so childish. Jeez. Come on. Come on. Anyway. You can pump the shotgun. Don't laugh! I swear to goodness, if you laugh, I'm gonna be so mad right now. Anyway. Alright. You can pump the shotgun. Which allows you to get more bullets, right? But if you pump it too many times, then it'll cause a huge explosion, which damages everything in the radius with a huge explosion, but it also damages you with basically half your health, right? So why would you ever want to do the triple pump, as it's called? I don't think it's called that. I just made that up. But we're talking specifically, I think the point is... there's a cool mechanic that you can do with the shotgun that I just figured out yesterday, because I looked it up. I'm sorry. A lot of these things you have to look up, because it doesn't tell you outright. You have to figure these out yourself. But The dash gives you 0.2 seconds of iframes. Those are, for the layman in the audience, invincibility frames, which allows you to be to take no damage for that specific amount of time, right? A fifth of a second you have while you're triple pumping the shotgun, and then you can shoot it out, right? The whole idea is that you can dodge the explosion in that specific amount of time, which allows everyone else to take damage except for you, right? Which does a huge amount of damage, gets you a huge amount of style points, and has been pretty much one of the main homesteads of my entire movement set for the rest of the game. I have so much fun doing that, right? I think a lot of the fun about this game, too, is you can really customize what you want to do with the movement sets, right? Because there's a lot of stuff that I still have no clue how to use, right? Like the rockets. The rockets specifically are so hard to use because in order to explode things, you have to first shoot them up in the air and then shoot them while they're falling down, which is very hard to pull off for me. I have a very hard time gauging the timing on that. However, there's a bunch of other things that make up for that. Like, I can easily, like, specifically with coin shots, those have come pretty easy to me. Again, with the triple pump dodge, that also comes pretty easy to me. There's a lot of other cool stuff about this game that just, so good. And the enemies, too. Like, I feel like a lot of the enemy patterns, like, allow you to be quick with it, but also challenge you at the same time. Like, I thought, for example, one of the bosses, Gabriel, was extremely hard. Like, I thought that his movements were way too quick for me. However, there's a fun thing you can do, which is called a parry. What is a parry, you may ask? Well, like the name suggests, you can basically send back any attack that an attacker gives you, right? So the whole idea is that everything can be parried, which is basically just punching either the bullets that come towards you. Like, for example, there's a simple enemy at the start of the game that teaches you this, where it shoots a simple projectile at you point blank. There's no homing, there's no anything like that. So it teaches you that in order to beat this game, in order to be able to be good at this game, not necessarily have fun with this game, but to be good at this game, you need to be able to shoot back attacks with not necessarily pinpoint accuracy. I think it actually gives you a lot of leeway with parrying as a whole. I'm able to, like, chain, like, a bunch of parries, and I'm not even, like, specifically trying at that point, right? But being able to shoot bullets back at enemies is the most satisfying thing, in my opinion. It's literally, like, it gives you a huge endorphin rush. Like, I honestly, all the time, it's instant for me. It's beautiful. I love it. Let's also talk a little bit about the level structure, and then we'll get to music and narrative, because I think this game has a lot to do with a lot of those, and I think you'll like it, too, if you like these kind of games. I'm being such a little silly Billy. Look at my silly smile. Oh, wait, you can't, because I'm an audio bite. You can't hear me. Also, I'm using, just for a fun little tidbit, a little aside, I'm using data right now. So I'm literally, I don't even know how much, I don't even look how much data I'm using. It's kind of scaring me. Like, are we asking the shotgun? Of course we're asking. We always ask for consent before we pump. That's the only way. That's the only way. Freaking guy, man. You know what? I'm going to quickly look at my data. I'm just going to quickly take a little peek at my data. That's actually not too bad. I think because I was having, I wanted to put, like, cool Halloween ambiance in the background. But unfortunately, again, the network didn't let me, so I'm working on with data right now. So I can't stream it without being a little bit, I can't really do that. But that's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, guys. Guys, don't worry about it. Guys, don't worry about it. It's gonna be fine. I'm not gonna use this in that much data, right? Oh, jeez. You know what? I need to put back the ambience. It's getting a little lonely here. I need to put back the ambience on. Hold on. Wait. Yeah, here we go. Halloween Thunderthorn ambience for for sleeping? For sleeping, guys. Guys, for sleeping? Hold on. Wait a minute. I think, there we go. Wait. Oh, yeah, that's good. Oh, yeah, that's good. Listen, I'm fine with giving up a little bit of that. And you know what? I'm going to put it on 144p. Surely that will help. Oh, that's so pixelated. Welcome to 2004, everybody. So, specifically, let's talk a bit about the context of the levels and how this game kind of released them as they went on, right? This game came out in 2019. Well, it sort of came out. What I mean by that is that it came out with a demo of the quote-unquote first layer. Actually, I don't think the first layer specifically resided with that. I think this was just the entrance to hell, right? So the first, the epilogue, as it's called, was just the first five levels, where it just gave you a quick teaser. It let you play around with the mechanics a little bit. And that was pretty much it. They only gave you the first five levels. And then everyone loved it. So, I think his name is I didn't really do too much research, you guys. So bear with me here. Ultra kill guy. Literally, I'm not joking. When I put in ultra kill guy, it puts in Gabriel. Guys, it's not the guy. This is not the guy. I'm not talking about Gabriel. He is funny, though. He's voiced by that one guy. What's his name? Gianni. Specifically, it's a specific voice actor within the kind of meme industry. It's getting a little hot here, you guys. I gotta take it off. I gotta. Hold on. Bow chicka bow wow. Oh gosh! Wait a minute. This is like in the horror movie where it's the guy. He's gonna take off his shirt and then it's Jason. Jason, he's at the pool and he stabs him. Oh jeez, guys, that's not good. That's not good. Well, besides the point. It's Hakita. Okay, I see now. Hakita was the one who created Ultra Kill. Apparently, it began development in 2018, right? And it's just released in 2019. And then it got picked up by New Blood Interactive in 2020, right? New Blood Interactive is a indie studio that has a lot of very decent games. I haven't actually played any of their other games, but they seem pretty fun. Yes, we are. It released an early access of that year, and then from then on, it continued to develop and evolve and continue to gain more layers. Now, for a little bit of a teaser to the narrative of the game, it's all based on Dante's Inferno, which is to say that it's based on all the different layers of hell of the Divine Comedy, right? We got a bunch of them, specifically regarding the different sins, the deadly sins, as it were. If we take a little peek, we got first Limbo, which is for all the lost souls that couldn't make it to Purgatory, apparently. Then Lust, makes sense. Gluttony, Greed, Wrath, Heresy, and then Violence, and then Fraud, and then Treachery. Those are the nine layers of hell. And obviously, there's some other cool landmarks in between as well, of course. You got the River of Styx in between there. You got the City of Dis. Some of these things come up. Obviously, some things are changed for intrigue. But the main point of the game is to get to the bottom, apparently. Because blood is fuel and hell is full. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, people? We're getting a little sidetracked, so let's go back to one of my favorite parts of this game, the music. The music goes in so incredibly hard, you have no idea, audience. This soundtrack is sort of like a little bit of a heavy metal breakcore, as I would describe it. If you told me to describe this soundtrack, I'd say heavy metal breakcore. Now, what does that mean, breakcore? Everything's core nowadays. It's core. What are we talking about, right? Breakcore is the simple inclusion of a drum beat that's constantly remixed and kind of kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Chopped up to a point where it becomes like a, even more, it's kind of like a sort of like an EDM adjacent thing, right? You could hear it in the earlier things, but I also have to say, it has a lot of weird semblances to either classical music or even like some sort of like, a lot of this soundtrack is in organ music, which is really cool. It adds such a more of a hellish quality while also adding a sort of divine quality at the same time. Organ just really brings out that kind of ambiance of being in like a church, as it were, right? But then it kind of pulls the rug under you and goes into this amazing like kind of remix breakcore number. Which is the soundtrack is just fantastic. Heaven Piercer is the sort of quote unquote band that Hakita made for this game, which kind of goes through all the different acts. So you see Limbo, Lust, and I think Gluttony are all in one act, and then. The next three layers, which were, I got this, hold on, Wrath, then Greed, no, it's Greed, then Wrath, and then Heresy, that makes sense, which all have their own sort of vibe and different aesthetic as you go into it, right, and the music reflects this, all of them have their own style. And as you continue to go down, here's the one thing I have to fear about this game. Is that Hakita is really good at improving, right? Just recently, there was a new update where he added a bunch of new stuff. Specifically, I'm going to go into a little side tangent here. He added King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard to the soundtrack. I talked about this earlier in one of the diatribes, one of the episodes that that I didn't have enough time to research thoroughly for. But man, is it good. I just love Nonagon Infinity, like, all the hits are there. I think Supercell is also in there, and also The Dripping Tap. All these songs just go perfectly with the game. However, unfortunately, it's only in the Cyber Grind mode, which is the kind of free-for-all, constantly, I guess it's like a wave, it's wave-based instead of, like, level-based, right? So you just continue going through the waves, and having to constantly defeat enemies, which I think is really fun. It just ramps up perfectly. I think the music just adds so much character to it. There's something I was saying to this as well. Right. So the main problem that I'm thinking that might occur is, again, he had to go back and update everything from the enemy behaviors to how the sort of vibes looked of the game to make sure it's updated to look as pristine as it should, to clean up the code base and all of these other things that will be required to keep going for him to continue working on the game, right? My problem is that if the levels get longer, because like some of the first levels took me literally like 5 minutes to beat, 2 minutes to beat, right? Obviously, I played this game before. But even the more recent levels in violence, in the violence lair, took me like 20 minutes. Granted, I was backtracking because I couldn't get through the damn labyrinth with the damn minotaur pissing me off. But that's the main thing. I think obviously he has a lot that will probably work in his favor. Like, I don't think that it will, once it's out, I don't think it'll be out just as like a purely finished copy. I think he's obviously going to make sure it tweaks. That being said, like, I think with him not having too many deadlines, again, I'm not too worried about this. I was also interested to see that, a little another side tangent, Hades 2 got an update regarding their narrative. It had a bunch of new requirements in order to beat the game, and added much more, dialogue options that allow you to fully have a more fleshed out ending rather than what upset people regionally. And I think this is a pretty good update. I haven't really seen much like in regards to that because I've already beaten the game. But I might actually quickly either check online or just beat the game myself to see what the new updates are. It is interesting to see. I'm actually curious to see what these new changes were. But I think what people were saying, I think they did a pretty good job with it. So good job, Cooper Giant. You did a great job, man. Good job. Good job. So, what is the narrative of this game? What is it really that you have to do? What is your character would want to achieve in this game, right? All these will be discovered after this quick break. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going overtime. We're probably going until 10:20, so stick around. We're going to be playing some more spooky music from the new album that came out in 2023, Ultra Kill Violence Lair. So, have fun, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I think that this specific lair is probably one of the best ones. I think that the opening, it's just so good. It puts you on so much ill at ease because it opens up to a beautiful white chapel, right? All the walls are pristine and white. And you go in, and there's just a bunch of these disgusting, weird mannequins that just kind of stare at you consistently. And then you go into the room next to, I guess, the hallway that's next to it. And you open up the book that's kind of on a little pew, and it tells you to paint the world red. Violence is our art. See, this is the fun part about this game. There's times where it's like, oh yeah, we're in it now. But sometimes it's where like it puts you on the other foot, and you have to kind of you're just kind of in it for the ride at that point. So, as we continue down, we can talk a little bit about the story of this game. What is Ultra Kill all about? Well, from what I can tell, and what Wikipedia tells me, combined strength forces me shaking hands with Wikipedia. Well done. In the game, apparently, there was a huge war that occurred on the actual in the actual Earth itself. Right, machines were created of mass destruction. Mechanical, you know, robots that were able to siphon blood, which then were used to create war, right? Here's the fun part. Apparently, it's telling me this huge... I didn't even know that. That's crazy. But from what I've known, I'm not going to give you too much from this specifically. But all you need to know is that there was a huge cataclysmic war that came out. All of the Earth was pretty much tarnished. The sun was blotted out. Whatever happened, famine occurred, and death then followed. And a lot of it, billions of people started dying, and most of them going to hell because they were in fact a part of this war, right? Which then caused them to kind of be sent to hell. Now the problem is that the robots, because of their constant need for blood, decided to also go to hell, where there would be more blood. You know what? I'm not going to question it. I'm sure there's some sort of random portal to hell that they'll be able to find out. So, basically, I imagine, like, I would too if, like, here's the thing. If I were God, I'd probably get the hell out of there. And that's what he does. In fact, is not there. And he's not present in this universe. So, then the Council of Heaven takes over, where they kind of perpetuate the sort of reverberations of a god. And this is what I was going to talk about with Discworld, especially. Because I think that the scene with Gabriel, who is an archangel, if you're not familiar with the Bible, or at least with the Christian doctrines, Gabriel is an archangel that serves God and is sort of testament. However, in this universe, because God is gone, the Council, then, because you defeat Gabriel in one of the boss fights with him, almost strip him away of his godly nature, and say that within 24 hours, then you're going to be stripped away of all your godly essence and die, basically. Be sentenced to the abyss, never be seen again. But a lot of this kind of belief, this dogma around all of this kind of stuff, is kind of what it goes in hand with Small Gods, is a Discworld novel that Terry Pratchett wrote back in 1999, I believe. It was one of the best ones that I think I've ever read, because it has a lot to do with how religion is perceived, how dogma perpetuates, and how it can kind of facilitate itself in a sort of cocoon, right? Where imagine you're thinking of a turning into a butterfly, right? Obviously, it eats and engorges itself. The caterpillar specifically engorges itself, then turns into a sort of pupa, cocoon-like state. Which apparently I've just found out. This might be misinformation, but apparently the caterpillar dies in the process. I don't know what comes out of the butterfly. Maybe it just like makes the butterfly. That doesn't even make any sense, though, to be fair. Like, I'll have to look that up specifically. I'm still... The mysteries of caterpillars is still an enigma to me. Like, why would they be able to sacrifice themselves to be able to determine themselves? Are they the same creature? Are they different creatures? I think once we figure out the secrets behind butterflies, that's when we'll figure out if humans have souls. But to get back into my analogy, right? Imagine the set of doctrines that originally created religion are it's the pupa, right? Is the thing that is hiding within the cocoon, right? The problem occurs when you have a bunch of more stuff kind of accumulated on top of it, right? Different doctrines get added onto it. Different people's beliefs and views kind of intersect and intertwine and become even more, where it encompasses the thing even more. Like, for example, think of Christianity, right? We can interpret the Bible a billion different ways. It allows us to interpret what the original authors had intended. But at the same time, we can skew the meaning of their words to be able to, obviously, support our own rhetoric, our own ideologies, our own dogma. By doing this, we add more material to the cocoon, which then crushes the pupa inside of it, and the original belief dies, right? The religion is no longer a religion. It becomes a sort of, more of a established rhetoric machine that allows itself to exist even though there's no living host inside that it needs to protect anymore. It lives in hollow existence. So what do I mean to get at here? I think that's the main problem with a lot of religion nowadays. Like, I think that that's exactly what Terry Pratchett was getting at with Small Gods, and I think that's exactly what Ultra Kill's trying to teach us right now today. See, you didn't expect to have a little theology class today, but I'm tickling your little brain. I'm making sure I'm folding extra creases into it because you watched too much brain rot, my friend, and I have too. So we know what, we're in the same boat here. We got to make sure that we're learning, everybody. So, as you do, obviously, as you continue down the layers, you see a bunch of other things from not only Christian theology, but also Greek mythology as well. You get to meet the Minotaur, like I said, in his little maze in the Violence Lair. There's also a bunch of other, like, mechanical stuff in there, too. Like, for example, the last boss of the Violence Lair is the Earth Mover, which was apparently the final, like, I guess, machine used in the end stages of the final war that caused all the climate to change and the Earth to be completely unusable and barren and full of famine and caused everyone to die, which caused everyone to go to hell. I just love all these kind of things. And Gabriel! And, of course, Gabriel. We can't be remiss to talk about Gabriel. I gotta give him the voice actor from full credit here. Hold on. Gabriel Ultra Kill. Gabriel Ultra Kill is voiced actor Gianni Matragrano. I think that he does such good stuff for this series. Like, specifically, he does it with a lot of his work, right? I remember back in the day, if you've ever seen, like, sort of the thing that kind of got me into Columbo was him. He's doing a lot of voices, like little memes about Columbo, and he was doing a lot of voices for Gabriel, which is the archangel in question here. who kind of becomes a sort of like twisted, mangled version of himself without the presence of God, right? Because he realizes that he can't. The spark is gone, as he puts it in his own quotes. It's a really fascinating piece of sort of prose. What happens after the fact when he realizes that his impact isn't needed anymore, right? That's the sort of idea that like nothing really matters. So eventually, I can't spoil it. Apologies, I can't spoil it. You all have to see it for yourself. Like when Gabriel goes sicko mode. Now, to be fair, there's also a bunch of, you know, extra little, there's a little tidbits in the little gaming space regarding V1, which is the character you play, and Gabriel, that they kind of do little kissies, you do little smooches. So if you want to check that out, be sure to write Gabriel V1 rule 34, everybody. Yes, the most serious thing of all. No, but seriously, this game is absolutely fantastic. It hits all the notes for me. And how could we end this without not talking about the memes and secret levels? In each of the layers, there's a little secret, a little nugget for you to yoink and check out, that it kind of takes a completely different genre and implements it into the game, right? So for Kai, you can't stop me, by the way. They're gonna look it up no matter what. I'm sorry. They're gonna look up Gabriel V1 Rule 34 no matter what. They're gonna look it up. And you know what? I can't protect them for any longer. I can't protect them. They have to find out the truth. They have to. Anyway, memes and secret levels, right? So, in the first layer, you find out there's this little secret chamber. That you can go into, where you can basically skip most of the level, which is really interesting. But instead of going to the next level, you go to a secret level, a level that's not mentioned in the actual menu. These secret levels kind of take from other games and other genres and give you a whole different experience using the already established concepts, which I think is really funny. Take, for example, Floor 1, which is literally just the game Flow. If you played that on mobile before, it's literally just connecting pipes and drawing little lines between pipes without them intersecting, and making that into several small puzzle games. It's so funny. Like, I literally, there's no killing at all. It's so relaxed. You just fill in the puzzle. And then Layer 2 is literally a visual novel. It's a visual novel game that it takes place. It kind of takes in the form of a kind of like, you know, anime schoolgirl kind of like tsundere kind of weird character trope. And it's so dumb that it comes back around to be funny again. I love it so much. Obviously, I didn't really check out the other ones because I didn't have enough time, but I will. And I might get back to you on those depending on that. But I know level floor 7 has to do with a game called Power Wash Simulator. So in the main game, it kind of sets up this kind of intense, weird tone, painting the world red, right? Painting the walls red, painting everything red. But in this game, it's like, nah, actually, you have to clean it up. Sorry, man. Here's your bucket. Here's your mop. Get the cleaning, buddy. But no, I think this game is so enticing. If you have any free money, I think it's actually on sale. Let's check the price, because I always support my indie devs. Ultra kill. No, I think it's still. Oh, geez. Oh, that's a lot of. Oh, no. Wait, come on, guys. There's got to be a little sale going on. Really? Come on, man. It's still $30, which honestly is a steal. I think that it's earned so much more than that money. There's some people, obviously, I'm going to talk a little bit about the critiques about this game. Some people say that the updates are too slow, regarding people thinking it's a deadware game. People saying that specifically that they're not going to support any new updates. I do not believe these for a second. Like, he's updated the game regularly. I think that
people are just so impatient to get the games now. Obviously, people have been burned with early access games before, which is a model that perpetuates being able to publish a game without actually having the full game released, not having the full features, not being able to flesh it out. And you can kind of pin most of the game's intrinsic value based on, oh, it's not fully complete now, you guys, you know, and then they completely abandon the game. That's happened before, completely. But this game has already given so much. It's given so much depth, allowing so much different intrinsic ideas and concepts that it is totally already over-earned its welcome at this point. It's completely kind of set into this run-and-gun combo-infused game that allows you to pretty much play the game however you want, allows you to feel super cool and powerful when you pull off an insane combo, and allows you to have a sort of interesting, different perspective. A sort of like dungeon punk aesthetic to an originally established story regarding Dante's Inferno. It just has everything that you need. It has like all the different things you need. And obviously, if the game's too hard, like there's a bunch of different difficulties that allow you to play the game how you want it as well. So it's a game for everybody. It's basically a game for everybody. So if you feel up to it, if you feel up to the challenge, get Ultra Kill. Maybe don't get it now. Maybe get it in a little bit, but you don't have to get it now. Maybe get it like in a couple days when it goes on sale for like maybe 30%. I think that's worth it. I think that's more than worth the price. And if you don't want to get the game, but you're interested in heavy metal music and all that stuff, check out a bunch of the artists that kind of also make game music for this game. Obviously, there's Heaven Piercer, which is the main developer's kind of passion project for this game that allows him to kind of put all the music in one place, all the albums for all the songs and for all the different levels. But there's also a bunch of other artists that work on this game as well. I mean, different composers. Keegan Church does fantastic organ music. I still don't know if they're samples or not. It's so good. And he makes fantastically beautiful and, dare I say, haunting albums by himself, too. So check those out. They kind of mix the electronica, heavy metal themes while also adding the kind of sort of Gregorian aesthetic to his music. It's fantastic. And of course, there's a bunch of, other people that do pretty good stuff as well. The Cyber Grind, the main theme for the kind of infinite wave mode of this game, was made by Mega Neko. It's been in my workout playlist the entire, 3 years that I've known about this game. So please do check that out, too. And without further ado, I believe we're pretty much at time. Thank you all for coming at me for a little special Halloween treat. I've been meaning to do this episode for quite a while, so it's been nice to get this off my chest and finally come back to this game and give it another shot, because I was terrible at this game before. So, I'll leave you all to it. Get trick-or-treating, whatever you do. Go party. Have a good time. Stay safe. And I'll see you next week. Oh yeah, by the way, we might be I'll try to get the schedule out soon, because I'm thinking of, obviously we need to do the meta-narrative episode recently, which will cover One Shot and Undertale, which are games that have been kind of permeating in my mind pretty much since like when I was 10 years old, which is insane to think about. Of course, other episodes too, like I said before, because apparently of the scheduling conflict, I'll have to redo the Silk Song episode. So that will be a part two that I'll then upload in tandem with part one of the Silk Song. So that'll also be on your radars. So stay tuned, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.